Welcome to the Everything Is Earned podcast. I'm your host, Mike.
I'm your co-host, Tim.
And we're here to break down everything happening in your Cleveland sports world. And it's a good day for Cleveland sports today. Today, the Browns officially had re-signed Rashard Higgins, a.k.a. Hollywood Higgins.
Hollywood!
For the vet minimum, and he's going to be back for the next year. So, really going to add some competition to the third wide receiver slot and bring back a guy that's very familiar with Baker and that is really quite a fan favorite.
Yeah, we bring him back for a one year deal, $910K, an absolute steal. If we go back and look at what really was the driving force behind such a bargain, well, one, you had the deep draft class, so there's not as much of a market for these veteran receivers. But John Dorsey, I think, you have a little lasting effect with John Dorsey here, because even though that Hollywood Higgins didn't really fit in Freddie's system, Freddie didn't really like him, but I think it was ultimately Dorsey's decision to keep him out after he realized that he wasn't fitting in Kitchen's system.
Yeah, you're probably right there. The other thing here, too, is that Higgins actually re-signed with the Browns for less money than he could have elsewhere, and that he wants to come back to play with Baker because he has that chemistry, which is a really kind of a testament as to what the Browns are building and the confidence that he has in Baker Mayfield.
Well, he has like a natural chemistry with Baker. I think he understands what Baker tries to do and what his mentality is through his progressions during a play or during a drive. And he's willing to make himself available and find those dead spots and make it easier on Baker.
Yeah, I know what the chemistry goes back to. It actually goes back to all the way back to training camp in Baker's rookie season when Baker was playing with the twos and threes.
2018.
Because Tyrod Taylor was with the ones.
He was
or should I say Tyrod? If we're gonna get it correct, because there was that whole storyline where Tyrod was like, it's not Tyrod, it's Tyrod, and then
well, he's not really a vocal guy either. So
no.
he lets you know his on field or his work ethic speak for itself or its lead. You know
who Tyrod?
Yeah, Tyrod Taylor. He's like, you know what? Everyone calls me like Tyrod Taylor. Tyrod hasn't really stuck in my NFL. Like it, what? Like, you just say, hey, man, like, you have a rapport with reporters when you're on an NFL team. You build one. If you're over even half a season in, you have somewhat of a relationship with those reporters. All you have to do is say, hey, man, my name's not Tyrod Taylor, it's Tyrod Taylor, and squash it in like, your first, like, week or two. And especially if you're a quarterback, you have to have a demanding, kind of a stronger voice.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know about you, but I don't think Tyrod Taylor has had that, you know, strong voice.
No, not really. He'll get the opportunity over in LA with the Chargers there.
Will he though?
They
drafted Justin Herbert, number five.
Maybe they'll, I don't know.
Number six? Number five.
He'll probably have the same Baker scenario where he'll start three games, get injured, and then Herbert will come in. So,
well, I mean, if Hugh Jackson is the head coach over there,
the Chargers are kind of a mess right now. They just kind of blew things up in a weird way, and they didn't do things gracefully when moving to LA. And I just think that LA fans don't really care about football the way the rest of the country does. For example, Ohio was number one in the draft ratings.
Yeah, it was number two for the first 2 days, and then it finally took over on the third day as number one.
Yeah, and then we had the biggest cities, I think, actually the biggest cities were Columbus and Cleveland as the two biggest cities that watched the draft.
Yeah, Cincinnati was, near Cincinnati was definitely one of them. Yeah, it's a real surprise that Cleveland liked sports, you know?
Yeah.
I didn't know that it was as big as it is, apparently.
We just really liked the draft.
It took the numbers, it took the analytics for me to really get a perspective and really open my eyes to really how loyal or passionate Cleveland fans are. I'm like, oh, really? I didn't know.
I don't think that was it. I think the Browns fans are conditioned that every year this is where we have the most hope. And so this is where everyone's kind of pumped up and tuned in because they believe that something can change and they can actually get the draft picks right and that the Browns can be a team that can push to the playoffs.
Well, I think we're really, really passionate and loyal for the first few weeks when we think we might be a competent franchise. And then when we're not, it just kind of trickles off. I think it's nearly kind of like a Taz fandom. But you see that huge uptick in attendance, in views, in this overall focus and attention, like you did with the Cavs championship run. And I think as soon as I think it's gonna be even amplified when it's the Cleveland Browns, because we all still a football town. You still have the roots of the baby boomers who through their blood it runs football. I think that's what I've been most excited about with the Cleveland Browns this year is we could be competent.
It's true, and you make a good point about the baby boomers because they are a big group of Bernie loving
best generation
fans. Yeah, the best generation, so called. Don't get me started on the boomers right now, Tim. But I'll tell you this: going back to Higgins. I really believe he could have a big season, and it's twofold here. For one, like I said earlier, you're gonna have competition. You got Peoples Jones, who's newly drafted. He's definitely gonna be the punt returner
and kick returner. And you have guys on the roster. You have Cordell Hodges who stepped in and put some plays out there. You have DJ Montgomery, who's mostly a practice squad guy, but then you have JoJo Natson, who just came here as a ponytail guy, but he's a slot guy. He's a speed guy. And then you have Damon Ratley, who's also played had meaningful time.
Who's the big wide receiver that got hurt that everyone was all pumped about?
Oh, Taywan Taylor.
Yeah, he's... Buffalo? Not from the Titans. I'm thinking about the other... The wide receiver we shut down early because he, like, tore his... Something or other.
You're thinking about the big guy.
Yeah, there was a lot of rumors and hope.
Oh,
about
Willis.
Him. Yeah, Willis. Derek Willis. There was a lot of hype around Derek Willis last year, and maybe this will be the year where you're going to get some competition between Willis, Higgins, and Peoples Jones as far as competing for that third wide receiver slot.
I think we waived them.
Did we? Cause I thought that was the guy they were really kind of paying attention to.
I think it was to open up a roster spot at the time, and it might have been even Taywan Taylor that we even opened it up for.
Yeah, he's currently a free agent. You're right about that. Yeah. He's a free agent out there. So it's tough to be a wide receiver right now in the NFL.
Yeah,
jobs are scarce.
Mm-hmm. But going back to his short hit, I'm a huge fan. I've been pushing all offseason to re-sign him. And just the other day, he gave us a little teaser. He said he tweeted out like he has something to say to Cleveland fans. And then he had another this morning, or yesterday morning, and he finally broke the news, or Cleveland.com broke the news that he came back. But he's kind of been dropping hints all offseason. He's been locked in. Like, still on Cleveland this entire time. I don't know if you followed any of his social media, but he's been all over. He was definitely welcoming to all the new guys on social media on draft night.
Which is funny, because he was a free agent at the time, but he was acting like he's still on the roster.
Well, I think that's the right approach that he took it as, that he wanted to be here.
That's good. That's good marketing for him. Good branding out of him.
Yeah, I think that's just the character side of him that he's been here in Cleveland.
So I've gathered a couple stats here to further your point of why I think Higgins could have a good season. So back in 2018, Baker's rookie season, this is a really cool stat.
Baker played 13 and a half games. Yep.
Yeah, and Higgins played 13 games as well, and he actually led the NFL in catches that resulted in first downs with 27 first down catches.
How many receptions did he have that year?
I don't know off the top of my head.
Is it 27 first down receptions?
Yeah, but just to speak to his bad year last year, not only did he have some injury issues and the coaching staff wasn't giving him the opportunity, but he only had 4 receptions for 55 yards last year and a touchdown.
He played like only at 11. It was like... under 100 triple-digit snaps. I know that for sure.
Yeah, he only had 11 targets the whole season.
He had so many healthy stretches during that season. It was mind-boggling to me. he's one of the most talented number three receivers in the league. I'd go as far as to say he's the best third string receiver in the league at this time. He's definitely the best bargain for the Browns.
That's a good point too. You're getting a good deal on him. And here's the other thing too: is if say you have a Landry issue, or Landry goes down, or say you have OBJ gets injured, you're gonna have a guy who can go in there and be plugged in.
They're both coming
and
off.
Not have a big drop off. I mean, it's a drop off for sure, but
he's a very, very solid receiver.
You're not going to a guy who's on the practice squad then at that point. You got a guy who has established chemistry with Baker, and you're not going to feel like, okay, I can't get through this game, you know, with this second receiver. You're going to have a guy who's done it before with your quarterback, which is always a positive.
He's had over 1,000 yards receiving in his career, so he's definitely got it with some experience over the last four seasons. To bring up the numbers I was thinking of, you said 27 first-down receptions in 2018.
Mm-hmm.
Out of those 27, he had 39 total receptions. So we only had 12 catches that weren't for first downs.
Yeah, I mean, that's just big-time playing right there.
Those are valuable catches. That's what's going to say.
Yeah, you want to move the chains, absolutely.
Yeah, and when Baker's hitting a guy on third down, or he needs to hit a guy on third down, he has Mr. Reliable and his boy Hollywood over there on the receiving end of things.
So let's take one step further here on the Higgins thing. Another thing that's really interesting that we found out today is the Browns have not re-signed a wide receiver since coming back in 1999. Higgins will be the first one to do that since the Browns returned in 1999.
And the Browns have drafted 24 receivers.
That's a lot of receivers to not re-sign. And I thought that wasn't right at first when I was looking at it. I go, that can't be right. We had guys like Braylon Edwards and Dennis Northcutt and a couple other guys in there thrown in there that were like, man, I thought like they had like even Travis Benjamin, but their contracts were maybe longer for the rookie deals, and by the time their deals came up, they either had run their course with their abilities, or you know, or they got bigger money elsewhere. Like Travis Benjamin's a good example. He really was a guy I would have liked to retain with the Browns, but the Browns just weren't competitive, and they weren't going to put that money into signing him.
Yeah, into a skill position when you're not trying to compete.
Well, Travis Benjamin's an odd player because he's a slot receiver who plays the slot very well, but you didn't have a primary receiver at the time when his contract came up.
So he was like your number one.
So you're not going to have him as your number one receiver because he doesn't do what you need to be done at number one.
Yeah, but he had a lot of value elsewhere because he was such a great returner.
Yeah, and we thought Braylon Edwards was going to be good for a little bit. He had one good season, right? And then after that, the drop problems happened, and he just never recovered from it. And then I also thought Dennis Northcutt may have had a longer career with Cleveland, but I think the contract was just structured longer when he was a rookie. And he never really, after he had that nonsense with protecting his body and like not going for the first down a couple of times, like it got pretty worn out, and he lost, you know, favor with the fans there. Kevin Johnson the same way. I remember Kevin Johnson was a guy that was really very egotistical. And if you guys remember, he had also similar problems where he was talking about protecting his body and not going for the first downs. And Dennis Johnson had some injuries towards the end of his time with the Browns as well. But, you know, those guys always seem like complimentary receivers to me and not like your number one receivers.
Well, I think Braylon Edwards would be a potential number one if the drops didn't start to become such a factor.
You know who could have been a receiver that the Browns could have re-signed multiple times at this point? Julio Jones. Julio Jones was actually drafted by the Falcons because the Browns traded a ton of picks, or got a ton of picks from him, and they drafted Gerard Warren instead.
The Browns did?
Yeah.
And they drafted a whole other list of players.
Where's Gerard Warren right now?
That turned into nothing.
He's not in the league right now, but I'll tell you who is in the league. Julio Jones.
You're not getting me started.
Julio Jones, I think, at this point, is the top wide receiver in the league.
We have traded down so many times, and that same guy has turned into to be an excellent pitch. Another guy that could be in the same situation, not quite as valuable or elite as some of those other players that we ended up trading down to end of foot. I think AJ Green was one of them with Cincinnati. The Rams too, I think, with Jared Goff, but maybe Jared Goff. But in the third round, we traded with the Saints this year for that and the Saints drafted that linebacker, Brown, with a lot of Browns fans, a lot of analysts thought that we should have drafted instead.
I apologize. I was wrong. It wasn't Gerard Warren that was too far back. It was Phil Taylor. Phil Taylor was that the guy, sounds, that the guy sounds, we got
the instead. 25
yeah.
or something?
Yeah. We got Phil Taylor, Greg Little, Owen Marisic, Brandon Whedon, Trent Richardson, and those are the players we got out of that Julio Jones trade. And Atlanta got Julio Jones.
Remember we got a first-round draft pick from Trent Williams?
Yeah, and we did nothing with the next year. We bamboozled the Colts
so
and
bad.
And then celebrated it for a whole season, and then the offseason came, and we blew the pick. Who did we take for that pick? Do you remember?
It was a Justin Gilbert or something, right? It had to be. Danny Shelton. It's probably Danny Shelton.
Oh, I think it was.
It had to be Danny Shelton, because I hated that pick so much. Like, oh, man, the nose tackle, he's so good. I'm like, a nose tackle in the first round? That's absurd. That's almost as absurd as drafting a punter or a kicker in the first round.
Oh, Justin Gilbert.
It turned into Justin Gilbert.
Yeah.
It was one of those two players.
Oh my goodness. It turned into Justin Gilbert.
Remember when
he's a heavy sleeper, Tim. He's a heavy sleeper. It's an issue. He's addressing it. It's not that he didn't love football or that he wouldn't catch punts or that like he didn't want to answer questions at the draft. They just did zero due diligence on that. Like, he told teams he wasn't going to take punt returns and kick returns. Like, okay, that's fine. They're like, yeah, it's fine. And the Browns like, this is our guy.
I think I compared him to Andrew Bynum. But unlike Andrew Bynum, he wasn't a punter also until he decided to give up the sport.
Andrew Bynum's a weird player in basketball because he was dominant and he'd rather go bowling. Like,
you'd rather do anything else than put the time in. And become one of the best players, best centers ever played the game. He was immensely talented.
You know what was a weird crossover for me with the Andrew Bynum storyline? Is I watched that TV show Ballers, and the one player on there like started being a pro gamer, and like they kind of had a similar thing where he was like kind of stepping away from the game a little bit.
Oh,
but, like,
I think I know what you're
also
talking
like
about.
Wanted
is
to
that,
do
that big guy.
Yeah. And I like that little crossover because like. They could have taken it completely, like having him pull out of football. Instead, he stayed in. But it's just like it's odd when you see players like that are like making millions of dollars playing a sport. Like, I don't have passion for it. Like
how do you even get there?
You're immensely talented.
Oh my god!
And you have people around you to help boost you into that spot, or you're so money motivated that like you got there, and now that you have the money. You just don't want to need it anymore. You don't want to do it, or you realize when you get there. I am, instead of being number one out of 50, I'm now
number
51 out of 50. 50 I'm 49 out of 50.
Okay.
You know, practice squad,
but,
55
yeah,
guys.
Yeah, back to Ballers, it wasn't recently, but there was a light bulb, was the main one of the main characters in Ballers. It was a wide receiver that went to Miami.
Grady,
whatever.
Do you know what that's Denzel Washington's son?
Yeah, I was going to say, it's James David Washington. That's Denzel Washington's son. He was in Black Klansman with Adam Driver.
Yeah.
He was very good in that as well. I want to say he was in... Was he in the other... There was another...
He's been in several things recently, and he's very talented.
I was going to say he was in another pretty wastefully charged movie, but no, it was just Black Klansman. He was very good in that, but he's... I think he's got a few things coming out, but yeah, Denzel Washington's son. I knew I liked him. I knew he had like some like a crazy amount of actor like this talent, and I didn't know why. And then I saw him. I was watching a Laker game, and they just pointed the camera to him like when he was on the sideline. I was like, "Holy crap, that's Denzel Washington's son!"
It's cool. A weird light bulb, yeah. And I think that's really kind of a cool thing that you see like a. Father son combo that can both do it really really well, and I am actually very excited to see what he can do because he's super funny. That's the other thing is I always thought like Denzel Washington was funny, like mostly because he had that ability to have like a straight face after saying something ridiculous, and
he had great range.
Yeah, but I think that his son. Has more natural
charisma.
Natural humor charisma. Like his charisma is more like, you know, I can
humor based.
I can control the room with my humor, which is kind of cool.
He's 35. He's still pretty young.
Yeah, it's just wild, man. But like going back to
Higgins,
the draft, what the Browns have done here with wide receivers. You got to look at the totality of things here, and we talk about this last couple weeks about having to sacrifice players. And not sacrifice, you're not killing them, but having to be okay as a fan.
The show has gone dark, everybody. We're now sacrificing players during this time of the pandemic.
We went sacrificing players.
Super sacrilegious here.
Not sacrilegious.
Yeah, super. What's the pagan?
You'll get it. It'll come to you. No, but
false idols, the whole nine.
No, you're still not there. That's okay. So the thing I'm trying to say here is not sacrificing, but you have to be okay with losing a player to another team or losing them to free agency or having a cut or a trade happen on one of your role players. And consequently, the flip side happened. This is where when you build a talent up and you start to build a system, you will have players that will take less money and will want to play with your football team.
To want to be in that system.
To play in that system. Sometimes that's what it takes to win a championship, is getting players that'll take less money to go to play with you so you can build out your team and have them be part of the missing link to help you win that title.
Well, we talked about these consistently winning franchises. The best of the best. Yeah, the Steelers, yeah, Baltimore, yeah, the New England, of course. And we always say that you have these role players that just buy into the roles to allow the rest of the team to flourish and take off. And a guy like Rashad Higgins doing this early on with the Browns is a telltale sign that they're taking the next step into being a competent, to be a quality franchise.
Yeah, it definitely is a vote of confidence in what they're building. I really like that next step
and
idea there.
And there's an aspect to what you mentioned with these other receivers in the past. Either they leave because there's more money on the table, or the time is done, or they want to pursue elsewhere with the talent or the skill levels, or maybe pursue a championship. And another aspect you even forget is, or you might have left out, is we're in Cleveland. People always mention that, and for a guy who's nicknamed Hollywood, or bringing Hollywood back to Cleveland a little bit, it's kind of a little bit of a little storyline there a little bit. But I think, like I said, having that developing that culture where guys would take the last sacrifice, either a paycheck or a bigger role that they might have been able to get some other team, and to be a part of something bigger.
Yeah, and I think that he weighs this as a business decision too, because you sign a one-year deal, you have a good bounce-back year, and then maybe you sign a multi-year deal somewhere else down the line here.
You're betting on yourself.
Or maybe the Browns plans change next year and they move OBJ or Landry. But you set yourself up for the having more options on the table and giving yourself more talent is always a good thing. You can never have enough talent. So especially in a physical game like football.
Yeah, I believe that the Browns tried to offer him a larger or more long-term contract. But if I'm Rashard Higgins, I'm not trying to get a longer deal by this evaluation with the numbers with $900K. If I'm Hollywood Higgins, I believe I'm at least worth $3 to $5 million. And if
he'll earn his next contract if he can bounce back this year. I think for a guy like Higgins, who is probably just so joyful that the organization changed coaches. I mean, he's got to feel good about that. He's got to feel good about the system. I feel like listening to the coaches speak and listening to Andrew Berry speak, I feel like the maturity in the room has just gone way up. It feels less like a party and more like a business.
Well, it feels more controlled by the front office, the guys in the leadership roles, and does the players. The last year, most of the hype was centered on the big talk in the locker room guys. You had Odell, you had Jarvis.
don't forget Freddie wearing the Pittsburgh shirt, though. Like, that wasn't nothing. Like, Freddie made a crucial error in giving Pittsburgh a billboard material by wearing that dumb shirt. Like, Pittsburgh started it. Like, just unnecessary crap. And it's immaturity for a first-year head coach. Like,
well, like I said, besides not being able to control the voice in the locker room a little bit and having his voice kind of amplify throughout his players and kind of on the same page, you know, how the best teams do that. Well, the players' message will be the exact same as the coach. There's a reason that's the way it is.
Well, you know, losing makes everything worse. So when losing happens, things get worse.
He just had the ability
and winning covers up, you know, covers up the small things.
He just went buddy too early. I think that could be a viable option, but you have to be stolen first. I don't know. You see any of the best coaching movies, any of the best sport movies? They're always super mean, or they seem like a really like difficult hard-nosed coach, and to put you through the ringer and to get the best out of you. And then once you've achieved and kind of like shown that you're putting the effort and you're willing to like sacrifice and do what it takes, then he eases up and gets to know you and kind of peels off a layer.
So you just want to have like a Denzel Washington type style, you know, remember the Titan style camp where they're visiting.
No, I'm thinking like Coach Carter kind of thing.
Oh, Coach Carter, you want him to just throw stuff at him and cuss at him repeatedly.
No, just like
team punishment. You know, last year they had one of the more physical training camps, they said. And you know what was wrong with last year's training camp? Is that, like, Freddie was so determined to prove himself and, like, to say that he was going to change the organization and be tough.
The players.
Is that he pissed everyone off with how he ran his training camp. Like, he just beat the hell out of everybody.
I think he's
and by the time the season rolled around, everyone was like, F this, man. Like, I'm done with all this nonsense.
I think they just warm out a little bit too much. I think there has to be a balance between that. And it's a fine line, and you have to kind of balance on that fence. But I think you went a little bit overboard, and they used a little bit too much of the energy and the way early on in the season.
Yeah, and you have to have that a little bit of finesse there with it.
And so they had the energy kind of boost them early on in the season, but then it kind of faded, and they showed fatigue and injury early on too.
Yeah, and I agree that. So we'll see what kind of camp Stefanski runs here, and what kind of camp we're actually going to have with all this COVID stuff going on. But
it'll be interesting to see how this organizations on the lead handle that all in Cleveland.
All we know right now is that the Browns and Cleveland will be holding the draft next year. That's about the only
right.
Official
that's officially thing. That date is officially set. We have as of this past weekend, or was it?
Just Monday? Just a couple days ago here. Yeah, Tuesday. Tuesday. They announced it Tuesday.
Okay. Yes, April 29th to May 1st of 2021.
Yeah, lock it in.
In Cleveland, Houston.
Get your hotels set. You know, get your planes tickets booked to come here. We're happy to have you spend all your money in Cleveland.
Get your Greyhounds.
Please pump all your dollars into the Cleveland economy. We're happy to have it. It's great, man. The economic impact of the NFL draft is going to be awesome. For the people who are currently dealing with all this COVID stuff, and especially some of the small businesses in downtown and, you know, surrounding areas, they're going to get a really nice boost from the draft. And I think that'll help, come back from some of this stuff here. And the businesses should see a nice boost.
I think it'll provide a good boost and then help kind of get them, these small businesses, back on their feet a little quicker.
Yeah.
From this 2021. I think there's a few more professional events being held in Cleveland in the future, but Cleveland always does a great job when the national spotlight, and that's not a surprise for anyone who lives in Cleveland, who's grew up in Cleveland and knows Cleveland, but
especially in the last like 5-10 years, like Cleveland's really came out strong. And I gotta say that like what they're able to do infrastructure wise over the last few years here has been really impressive. And I'm really excited for the draft next year. I'm gonna take some time off work, and I'll definitely be down there hanging out for all the draft stuff.
Yeah, so it should be a really good time.
We're gonna get our press passes.
It'll be interesting.
And we'll be down there.
It'll be interesting to see how the whole social distancing and the new normal will play a factor.
Yeah, I'm into it. I'm excited for it. Last thing here, kind of on today's episode, something a little more fun, a little more lighthearted here, is I want to debate with you real quick. Just who has the best breakfast at restaurant breakfast, like fast food breakfast. I know I had this debate the other day on Twitter, and I said McDonald's, Chick-fil-A, Taco Bell, and what was my fourth one? Wendy's.
I haven't had Wendy's yet.
So for you, Tim, what's your top fast food breakfast? If you had to pick
I'm not a big favorites guy in any category. I have multiple favorites. I have multiple like top.
You're going to be politically correct about your breakfast choices?
Yeah. Okay. It depends on my mood.
Okay, so...
Am I in more of a chill mood when I wake up, or am I in a hurry? Am I in a fast-paced kind of mood?
Okay, so what are some of your favorites for breakfast from fast food? What are some of your breakfast favorites?
I think Taco Bell does a good job.
What do you like from Taco Bell?
There was the breakfast crunch wrap, I think.
Oh,
it's a bacon one that's my go-to. I combined that with a Kickstart or another.
A little citrus Kickstart.
Mild, yeah, nice little berry, mixed berry flavor.
I like a good citrus Kickstart.
But then I can go the opposite way and go straight southern and just grab a big old piece of the fried chicken. From Chick-fil-A.
You need a straight filet by itself.
Yeah, I've done that before, and it's been very interesting. Like, the first time I did it, I'm like, wow, I didn't think I would do this. And it was very southern, that kind of a biscuits and gravy kind of feel. Like, it's very wholehearted, kind of a...
It's a hearty, you know, stick to your ribs type of breakfast, if you go that way.
Yeah, definitely not a Miles Garrett breakfast, but...
I think Chick-fil-A has the best hash browns and the best breakfast potatoes.
They're little minis.
They're
best.
So good.
I'm a big fan of
they're
minis.
They're so good. They smoke everyone else's hash browns. Wendy's has these new seasoned potatoes that are very good. I really like those.
Oh, wedges? Do they have wedges?
Yeah, they're like seasoned breakfast potatoes. They're really good. Mm. They're my second. They're not hash browns, but they're very good. I really enjoy them. I like the Chick-fil-A minis that they have for breakfast. Those are really good. Chick-fil-A also has a really good breakfast burrito, which is excellent. And then I also agree with you that Taco Bell's Crunchwrap in the morning, the breakfast Crunchwrap,
yeah, it's
is
underrated.
Very, very good, as
cardboardy and stomach toning as some of the food can be. I don't know. I've had good experience with the breakfast.
It's great. It's a great breakfast sandwich.
I feel like it just feels to me like a higher quality than most of the food.
It feels more less fast foody and more like a home thing that you would make. Like it feels more like something you would make.
Wait,
in
it's just a thick. It's like a crunch wrap, but they put all the breakfast components.
It's good, man.
The country style potatoes, like I said, the bacon. And this
eggs and it's got the chipotle chipotle sauce in there. That's really good.
I like to put some salsa in that too.
A little breakfast salsa.
Yeah, I'll do that at home if I'm treating myself. I'll make a burrito and then have a line of like some fresh salsa with some cilantro.
That's the best
salsa in my opinion.
I like it there.
Cilantro based.
Yeah, I'm with it there. And then I really am not a big McDonald's person, honestly. I think McDonald's
it's trash.
McDonald's has been really
weed food. That's
not good.
That's kid food for when your kids won't shut up in the back of your seat, and you just have to power through another hour of errands or something like that.
Yeah, I've outgrown McDonald's a while ago. And
road trip food.
The only time I really get McDonald's is if I want their fries, or if I'm looking to get like an ice cream cone.
Or a shake, maybe.
Sometimes a shake. Sometimes a shake.
They're way better options for milkshakes than McDonald's.
Oh, I don't disagree with you. I just think that when it comes to breakfast, I think Chick-fil-A has probably the best overall menu, even though their coffee is garbage. I really don't really drink their Chick-fil-A coffee.
I don't drink coffee in general. I use caffeine substitutes.
As a alternative option, I like Panera for breakfast as well. They have some good breakfast sandwiches. They have smoothies.
Their drinks are the best.
They have some really excellent bagels
and lemonades.
Yeah, they do have some really
excellent. The guava green tea.
The guava green tea was bomb.
It's really good.
That's gonna wrap up a little breakfast discussion here. I think ultimately we learned that Chick-fil-A kills breakfast and kills lunch.
It's the most quality, and then if you like customer service, local, like small town business feel to it, we know they have the best customer service hands down.
Yeah,
they would go down a manhole cover to get your cheese.
That's
a real story that happened this past summer. they were taking orders out in the parking lot as they do to speed things up, and someone dropped their keys in the manhole, and they bought them out. They asked if, apparently, Chick-fil-A customers just go to the employees for help for things that aren't in their expertise and in the realm of. Of chill.
No job responsibilities.
Yeah, and they're so nice enough. They were nice enough to open up the manhole cover and just just climb down the ladder. That was and fist them out.
That's wild. I would never be like.
I would never go anywhere else for breakfast if an employee from one of these chains fist my cheese out of a manhole cover.
That's nuts. I don't know why would you be like, I'm just gonna wander down here, everything's fine, I'm a trained professional to do this, I work on sewers all the time. Also, would you like some fries with that? Like, I just don't like it'd be my pleasure to get your keys. Like, it's just kind of wild to me.
I wouldn't, yeah, like, they've changed tires. If I were one of those employees, I'm definitely the one that just happens to be in the bathroom or happens to be, have to demand the front of the store while everything else this is going on. I would not be one of those guys.
That's a little interview thing you could take to any interview, like, going forward. You could be like, yeah, legitimately, when I went above and beyond for a customer, I went down a manhole to fetch their keys. And, you know, to provide that excellent service.
That is the definition of unparalleled customer service.
I'm going to tell that story like 12 times now, at least. That's a pretty good story.
It's really good. I think it was Northeast Ohio. It had to be.
It's wild, man.
And then our last bit of news here, after a little social segment there, is we have 2017 first-round picks, David Njoku and Miles Jarrett. We picked up both of the fifth-year options. What do you have to say about that, and what does that mean for those players and this Browns organization?
I'm gonna keep it real short and simple on this one. Miles Garrett's a duh. You're gonna pick up his option. He's one of the best players in your team. I think that's an obvious thing to do. I think the second piece is Njoku is also, it seems less obvious to fans, more obvious to people who understand Kevin Stefanski's system and know that he's going to have two tight ends in that system at all times to work.
You don't have four tight ends on your roster and your active roster at all times, at least.
Yeah, you're not, because you can't have, like we talked about wide receivers, you can't have... You know, your Austin Hooper twists his ankle, and then there goes your offensive game plan. You're gonna have to have, you know, him and Njoku, and then
you can't rely on Harrison Bryant to produce and take over that role right away.
Right, so
you want to ease him into.
So he's gonna be your backup to Njoku, so he's gonna be a third string tight end. That's not a bad position to have, but it's gonna add some competition to tight end. It's gonna allow Njoku to perform to his, you know, to what I think his athletic ability, you know, allows him to. And I think that, like, that he's one of the most disappointing players in recent memory with the Browns, because it's not like, I don't believe, like, that Njoku lacks football talent. I believe that, like, that his drops have been so heavily stated in this past year. He really didn't get the opportunity to right that ship and right that wrong.
Well, he only played in four games this year because of the concussion and broken wrist.
He's another player that the previous coaching staff did not like, and actually, I think, actively went out of their way to give him a hard time.
It was obvious that they didn't use him properly. They just misused him. They didn't like him. And like you said, he kind of went out. I think goes for many offensive players in this past season. They just didn't use him right.
It's the same thing, though, is they gave Callaway an option, the opportunity to perform, and they didn't give it to Higgins. Like, you know, even though one has done everything right, the other one was busy. You know, was busy. You know, acting a fool.
Yeah, I mean,
dropping touchdowns,
and even off the field, he was doing everything that the organization said he needed to. his act together and like and quit doing.
He still wasn't doing it.
And he wasn't doing it. And so. And then it was still doing opportunities over Higgins. That makes no sense. A guy who has zero character issues and has chemistry with Baker, who has production, who has statistics in the NFL that he's been a proven quality backup receiver, and they're like, you know what, we kind of like this guy who's wildly fast. And like, all right.
One of the weirdest things of last year. Also, the Jannard Avery thing was weird last year too.
I still hate that. That's been a hot, particularly me, because I know how valuable and how talented he is. And just because of a coaching staff for half a season couldn't use him, we decided to trade him. Ridiculously stupid, in my opinion.
What are you gonna do, man? We have a good list of bad moves the Browns have made. That's why we haven't been in the playoffs since 2002. But we're righting the ship. We're turning things around. We're signing Higgins for veteran minimums. Things are going in a better direction. And so we're gonna leave you with the positivity that this Browns team is the most talented roster that we've had since 1999. And honestly, you could make a case that this roster is, you know, has similar talent or better talent than the Browns teams that went to the playoffs, you know, in the 90s.
80s and 90s, 80s, yes. 90s,
yeah, I think so.
But you did say the last two seasons have been the most talented since 99.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that at all.
But to take your comment one step further, you could say that this coaching staff could be the most competent since 1999. It's quite possible.
Yeah.
So we'll look at that and we'll keep an eye on that as we go and we get closer to the season.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. We're going to wrap this episode up here, and we definitely appreciate everyone who's continuing to listen, who, you know, has spread the love of the podcast, who continues to follow us on the social media and join in the discussions. We definitely appreciate it. You know, as we always say, you know, if you have something that came about from this episode that you didn't know or that you really felt that was valuable to your sports fandom,
an aha moment or a little light bulb moment,
throw it in. You know, a DM to us in a review,
a podcast.
Let us know about it, because, you know, I think this episode in particular, we had some really good information about the Higgins thing and, you know, and what he brought to the table. And I hope that you guys enjoyed the stuff we were able to find here, you know, and making you better Browns fans and better sports, you know, Cleveland sports fans.
I think that's one of the things that it's different from us, from other. A lot of people are just trying to give you the facts and what's going on currently, but we want to fill you in on the rest of the side of sports to make you a better, more knowledgeable sports fan.
Yeah, ultimately, we're trying to make you win your sports debates at your family's gatherings and, you know, with your buddies, so that, you know, you're the smartest person in the room.
And being more objective, because as Cleveland fans, we tend to be a little bit more erratic when it comes to our fandom. So sometimes you have to bring it back to earth, be a little bit more realistic, and a little ultimately more objective with some of our teams or players.
Yeah, we're bringing the realism here. We really are. We're trying to keep it 100.
But that does not mean that we are not super hyped and fully believe that there's potential of this Browns team to be in the playoffs this year.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, as always, in Cleveland, everything is earned. My name is Mike.
And I'm Tim, as always.
And we'll talk to you guys real soon on our next episode coming out on Friday.